Chapter 10. Elith sat stunned as she reviewed her findings, trusting the data even while her mind rejected the logical conclusion of their synthesis. No matter how she approached it, the fact remained. The thread line to Alan S., ancient root from the founding of the world, was dead. Thread lines were the pathways of the internal life of a planet. Their courses laid at the forming of a world as fundamental as the nervous system to a human body, and each network as singular as a fingerprint. They were the result of a planet's unique process of development, emergent from its tectonics, the movement of its stone and water, and all the vital forces that shaped and gave life to the world. A branch of a thread line just didn't end like that, at least not without some catastrophic, planet-shaking outburst with extinction-level consequences. But there was no sign of planetary trauma. No miles-wide gouge from an asteroid strike, or penetrating scar from a destructive cosmic radiation blast. The fact that the wilderness wasn't an utter wasteland defied logic, to say nothing of the abundant health she'd seen in her brief time at the preserve. Elith turned the problem over and over in her mind, attempting to find any other way to interpret the findings. But after a couple of hours of reviewing the data and reaching the same conclusion from every different approach she could imagine, it became apparent that she'd made no mistake. Each piece of the puzzle was clear. It was just impossible to connect them. The land had more to tell her, but she couldn't stay to listen. The tracks she'd discovered demanded that she move on. And yet she couldn't escape the thought that she was missing something, that her fatigue and fear were obscuring the way forward. Elith set her terminal aside. Staring at the data was no longer useful, and her mind felt as numb as her body did empty. At least she could do something about her body. She made herself as comfortable as she could in her cramped hideaway and ate. While she did so, a light rain began to fall. For a time, she listened to the quiet patter, allowing the sound gradually to replace the riddle in her mind with images of the trees around her, their varied oscillations like those of the gentle creatures in the quiet current of the sea. And she thought of the drops of rain, on their own each insignificant, yet together enough to send the entire forest trembling. She knew there were patterns in the apparent chaos of the trees. Every shiver and sway dictated by forces too complex and intertwined for her to calculate, and imagining those leaves and the raindrops that drove their motion sparked an idea. The technique called observing the manifold witness was typically used in high-level training for deep meditation on the teachings of the first house. The effect focused attention while expanding the mind's capacity for exploring hidden connections from many points of view. But the bridge between the conscious and subconscious was notoriously difficult to navigate, and even experienced advocates could find themselves subjected to harrowing visions that brought neither clarity nor comfort. Elith had never heard of it being used for anything other than improving one's understanding of first house precepts. But neither had she been taught any prohibition against other uses. Still, it took her a few minutes before she persuaded herself to attempt the effort. She sat up and held her hands loosely in her lap and first concentrated her mind on the image of the broken thread line, focusing solely on it until all other distractions fell away. And then, in the deep language, she recited the sealing phrase, "Two mirrors with neither flaw nor shadow between them. Light begets light." And in her mind's eye, she saw the rolling hills outside Alan S. as though from a great height. Beyond them, the mountain range that walled her off from Oren S. Somewhere within, the preserve of Eth Amuin and his fellowship. She stretched her hand down toward the ground, imagined drawing handfuls of the rich soil up. In touching the earth, she found herself now standing on it, amid a lush forest. The trees around her stood tall like spires, dark and spaced, with a regularity that spoke of plan and purpose. Elith looked around, trying to discern why the ordered rows gave her a sense both familiar and unsettling. And then recognition came. She'd seen this arrangement before, not of trees, but of headstones. She was standing in a forest of graves. She opened her hand and looked down then at the soil she'd taken, and found it contained not the healthy earth of Quell, but rather wet ash and fragments of bone. A faint green fire mist swirled around her hand, and as she watched, the bits of bone sprouted jagged-tipped thorns that grew and twisted into evil shapes. Elith turned her hand over to drop the growing tangle, but realized it was too late. The thorns had already pierced her palm and emerged through the back of her hand. No matter what she did, she couldn't release the mass. It clung as though it had become part of her. She looked again at her palm and saw the thorns had now stretched to an impossible length, a forest that should have been too massive to hold. Elith knew she'd plunged into a nightmare vision. Her conscious mind rebelled, tried to force her out of the state, but something deeper called to her, told her to wait, to press in, and despite her revulsion, she stood fast in the midst of the horror. She saw now that the only way to stop the spreading death was to close her hand. In a final attempt, she tried to clench her fist, though she knew it would do nothing more than impale her fingers. To her surprise, she was able to wrap her fingers around the entire mass. Pain exploded in her fist and radiated up her arm as though she'd grasped a handful of live coals. But still, she forced herself to squeeze, willing herself to crush the death she knew she held. It was too much. Despite all of her training, all of her endurance, all of the determination First House had forged within her, she could not persist. Her hand sprang open. The ash and bones were still there, as were the thorns, but they had lost their evil twist and shrunken to a natural size, now no longer than those on a rose. And a greater surprise still. From the tips of several thorns, delicate petals had grown, white, with crimson roots, new life emerging among the ruin. She considered the scene in her palm and recognized she'd compressed it all into a miniature landscape with the thorns as mountains. And when she looked up, the forest around her had disappeared. Now she stood on a grassy hilltop. She held her hand up, compared it against the horizon and the distant mountains, and saw how they nearly aligned. And while she looked in her trance, a hand fell on her shoulder, heavy and real, and she heard a man's voice. Elith Anuel. She startled from her vision, reflexively dodging the man's touch, her hands up, ready to defend herself. But there was no one. And of course, there couldn't have been. Her shelter was too well hidden, not to mention far too small. The quiet patter of the gentle rain continued undisturbed by the hammering of her heart. The vision lingered, neither hallucination nor mystical prophecy. It had been nothing more than her subconscious doing exactly what she had asked, processing everything she'd seen and communicating its findings with her the only way it knew how. The voice and the hand, however, were something else. Both had seemed so real that even now she couldn't shake the feeling that someone was out there, lurking nearby. She slipped quietly out of her shelter and crouched in the small clearing in front of it, scanning her surroundings. But there was nothing. She was alone in the wilderness. Elith returned to her shelter, still unnerved by the sound of the voice. Even now, the echo of it in her ear sent an electric wave rolling across her skin. It had called her name and had added a second to it, not her actual hidden name, but similar in meaning, which was somehow even more troubling. Her gaze went to her open palms, free of thorns. She traced over the flesh of one with her finger. Her name was written there, etched in her skin, invisible to the naked eye unless she wished to make it known. Her name, and her standing within the house. Elith Kiriel. Her identity, her hidden name, Kiriel, had been granted to her by her primary instructor, the woman whose sole duty for 7 years had been to train her, guide her, and care for her, and who knew her better than anyone had ever known her before. The name was not to be known outside of First House, nor even intended to be spoken, except in rare circumstances. It was primarily for the named to reflect upon, a deep meditation upon her inner self, her strengths, and her purpose. A resonant name, one that spoke of being truly known in the most complete sense. All advocates of the house treasured their hidden names and jealously guarded them. Why her subconscious had generated this new one for her was a complete mystery. When properly combined, Elith Kiriel meant something like corrector of courses, one who knows the way and aids others in finding and remaining on it. But Elith Annual was more like maker of ways, with the feeling of not just a pathfinder for others, but one who actually creates a way forward where none had previously existed. And though the two names shared similar themes, their dynamics were vastly different. And too, there was something about the voice that unsettled her. It had been that of a man, and its tone and timbre had been uncomfortably close to that of Eth Amuin. Elith did not know how to interpret that, nor was she certain that using the technique had been wise. At least a portion of the message from her subconscious was clear, though. She'd missed something in her analysis. The severed thread line was a sign of death and coming destruction, but there was something more. New life as well. She would have to look again. She studied far into the night, and had already long since given up hope of finding anything new when her compulsion for diligence unearthed a tiny detail she had seen before, but which gained new significance in light of her vision. Several miles back from the trailing end of the dead thread line, a small offshoot looped off and twisted back across the main flow. And though it made no logical sense, an image formed unbidden in her mind of a dam constructed across a mighty river. As though the energetic flow of the thread line had been used to tie itself off far upstream, its effects revealed miles from the source. Elith wasn't sure how that could be possible, but the tension in her mind resolved as though she'd found the sole solution to a complex riddle. Perhaps it was only because she knew now what her next step would be. More than anything, she just wanted to escape the area entirely, to travel to some other part of the planet and put as much distance as she could between herself and the search party she knew was on her trail. But this strange thread line demanded her attention. The world she'd mapped in it was roughly 25 miles southwest of her campsite, a full day's hike. It might not help her shake her pursuers completely, but it would open the gap between them and might give her enough time to complete the work. She'd sleep the few remaining hours until dawn, and then press on. She was up and on the move in the frostbitten half-light of pre-dawn, anxious to evade the noose she could not see, but nevertheless felt tightening around her. By the next sundown, Elith had closed to within 3 miles of her target point, without sight or sound of the search team. There she made camp for the night and final preparations for the following day, and was on the move again as soon as there was light enough to see by. She reached the perimeter of the investigation site as the sun was breaching the horizon. Mapping the loop in the thread line wasn't an exact science. It was minuscule by planetary standards, but still hundreds of yards wide. Given the flow and roll of the terrain and the density of some of its forest, Elith knew she had a long day ahead of her. It didn't help that she was lugging all her gear, working out of her pack. But despite the heavy duty upon her, Elith tried to remind herself how this sort of research had always been her favorite part of the job. The Ascendance's method of terraforming worlds left them like cousins in a long line. Family traits were apparent, but expressed in different, sometimes startlingly unique ways, and seeing the boundless creativity manifest in each world never failed to move her. Before she began her work, she took a moment to breathe deeply the frost-laden air, to consciously open herself to the sweep of beauty before her. The wilderness had a pristine feel, wild and pure, almost sacrosanct. Judging from the weight of the quiet, she knew she was experiencing a part of the planet that very few of even its lifelong residents would ever know. And in that quiet span, she found in herself a most unexpected warmth toward Quell. For all the danger it posed, and all the trouble it had given her, somehow while her mind had been solely focused on her mission, a strange fondness for the planet had wormed its way into her heart. Perhaps it was nothing more than the sort of grudging respect one might feel toward a particularly skilled adversary. She hoped there wasn't something more sinister at work. After her meditative moment, she refocused on her task, maintaining an infiltrator's mindset. In addition to whatever humans were attempting to track her, she had no idea what other creatures might call the region home. For the first hour of her survey, she caught only fleeting glimpses here and there of the wildlife inhabiting the place. At most, she would spot a patch of fur through the brush, or a streak of a bird gloriously arrayed. Even for animals unfamiliar with humans, they seemed unusually sensitive to her presence. Elith got her first full view of one of the forest's denizens as she crept to a ridge overlooking a wide clearing. Farther down, a massive creature grazed. She would have called it an elk, if not for its unusual brindled color and the rounded, slightly flattened shape of its antlers. She used her monocular to range the distance, and as she did so, astoundingly, the animal's head popped up from nosing the ground and looked in her direction. At over 600 yards away, it had apparently caught some sense of her. It didn't spook immediately, but it did move away and disappear behind the crest of another hill. How it had detected her, she had no idea. As she moved back from the ridgeline and into the woods, Elith came across a patch of the forest carpeted with wildflowers she'd never encountered before. They stood tall on thin stalks, roughly knee-high, and had the bell-shaped flowers of a bluebell, but were smaller, and a pale lavender so delicate it looked like the color might melt away at her touch. Known locally as Fairy Queen, according to her scanner, both rare and dangerous. Beautiful to look at, though apparently toxic if ingested. She knelt at the perimeter, inhaling their scent deeply, and gently traced the petals and stems with her fingertips. And there she discovered why all the animals had been so switched on. A fresh print lay in the soil nearby. Elith moved to it, and even though it was only a partial imprint, there was no mistaking what had made it. No human. A predator of a different kind. A bear. Elith placed her hand alongside the print. The impression was at least half again as long. And it wasn't even complete. Judging from the direction, the creature had approached and then bypassed the Fairy Queen patch. How long ago it had passed through, Elith couldn't be certain. But the impression couldn't have been more than a few hours old at most. Possibly much less. She scanned the area with new eyes. A few feet away, a glint on a tree caught her eye, and when she investigated, she found a tuft of fawn-colored fur that flashed with specks of gold when the sunlight caught it just right. It was beautiful, but after she'd gathered it and examined it, she felt she'd seen all she wanted to. She moved on quickly from that area, headed the opposite direction of the track, hoping never to see for herself the creature from which it had come. Sometime later, Elith came across the beast anyway, and it was terrifying. It was a good 300 yards away, near the top of a hill, apparently having circled around from its previous direction of travel. Her best guess put it at least 6 feet tall at the shoulder while it was on all fours, though she knew her fear might have been skewing her estimate. At that size, it didn't really matter. She could have been overestimating by 2 feet and still been in plenty of trouble. Of all the tools at her disposal, Nothing would stop a creature that size if it were determined to get to her. If she came face to face with it, her best and only hope would be to scare it off. And that was a small hope indeed. She changed direction again and made a wide circle of her own, navigating her way to her intended destination while trying to give the fearsome creature plenty of berth. The difficult terrain forced her to take measurements at irregular intervals, sometimes requiring her to double back or crisscross her own trail as she gathered the data and adjusted her plan as the samples dictated. Every change of direction seemed only to increase the likelihood that she would once more encounter the beast. About half an hour later, she spotted the bear again, closer this time, and the second sighting gave her the sense that it wasn't just ranging around. She observed it for a minute or so, judged its behavior. Something had agitated it. The obvious explanation was also the worst one. It had picked up her scent and was trailing her. Elith once more took a new direction, her eyes keen for any sign that the bear had already passed through. About half a mile distant, she came across a patch of wild vines, dangled with heavy, soft-fleshed berries, like dark purple cherries, but nearly fragile enough to burst at her touch. She gingerly gathered a handful, some for samples and a few after verifying they weren't toxic, for herself. They were sharply tart, with a bitterness toward the end, not unpleasant, but not a flavor she would choose to seek out, either. The fact that so many of them remained undisturbed gave her some small hope. The bear hadn't passed this way yet, and if it did follow her through, there was a chance the berries might distract it for a time. A few minutes later, she came across something else, something that robbed her of even her smallest hope. About 30 feet ahead, a thicket showed clear signs of breakage. In the midst of the undergrowth, Elith could make out shapes foreign to the natural terrain. She scanned the area and then crept closer, heart hammering, and verified what instinct had told her. Backpacks. 6 of them. Neatly but hastily arranged. Beyond all probability, the search team had already caught up with her. And if they had dumped their packs, that could mean only one thing. They thought they were close enough now to catch her. It took everything Elith had not to turn and run. A few seconds to observe, to think, might make all the difference. Several tracks led off from the site perpendicular to her approach. The large packs were in good condition, but hard used. Elith's quick eye judged them to be roughly half full. The team had been in the field for a while, maybe as long as she had been. Even if they were exhausted, though, 6 of them were just too many to ambush. And there was no guarantee that there were only 6. But the discovery of the supplies offered a scant chance. She had no time to improvise any sort of trap, but the fear of one would serve almost as well. Elith picked up a pair of sticks from the ground and laid them across the top of the packs in an X. When the team returned, the message would be clear. She knew they were after her. Hopefully, the psychological impact and fear of ambush would slow their pursuit, assuming she could pull off the escape. Elith recalled then her other pursuer, and another idea sprang to mind. She pulled out the sample of berries she'd collected and crushed them against the underside of one of the packs. Though she had little hope of its usefulness, if the bear continued to follow her, maybe it would do her a favor and pause long enough to ransack the supplies. Those brief actions were all she could afford. Elith crept away then, her skin electric with her great danger. From then on, the whole region felt too small. All focus now went to getting out of the area undiscovered and as far away as possible. Every step of progress was hard won. Each demanded the utmost caution and attention, and every rustle or snap required her to pause and assess. Elith noticed how her surroundings had quieted, as if the forest itself were holding its breath, watching the drama of her narrow escape unfold. She prowled her way out, her pace agonizingly slow as precious minutes of daylight burned away. But her fear, her fatigue, and the terrain all conspired against her. The past few days had taken more out of her than she'd allowed herself to admit. She fought on for as long as she could, but when night closed in and forced her to stop, she'd only opened a few miles between herself and the search site. For a time, Elith just sat on the ground, breathing, listening, alternating between believing she'd escaped and expecting sudden ambush at any moment. The darker and colder it got, though, the more she began to hope she'd slipped the noose after all. During her research, she'd been frustrated by how often she'd been forced to loop back across her own trail. It seemed now to have had the unexpected benefit of confusing her pursuers. Even so, the fear wouldn't completely abate. But sitting in the cold night served no purpose, and she still had plenty of work to do. She set up her shelter, forced herself to eat, and then ran through her meditation sequence, hoping to replenish her energy and focus for the tasks ahead. Once done, Elith crawled into her shelter and pulled out her personal terminal. Her best hope of escape now lay in losing herself in an entirely new setting. But she knew she couldn't abandon the region. She was too close to the heart of the matter, if not at it already. Elith brought up maps of the area and looked at the cities and towns closest by. Alaness was relatively close. A day and a half of hard travel, maybe two. But she knew now that there was no thread line there for her to exploit. It would be a temporary haven at best. Orinnes was ultimately the better choice. There it would be easier to blend in, and she had little doubt that another thread line would be reachable somewhere within its borders. Unfortunately, the preserve and its mountains stood between her and that bustling city, and Elith didn't even know where the perimeter of Eth Amuin's compound lay. If she tried to make it through on foot, she might wind up walking right into their surveillance network without any hint or warning. And then there was a tiny, ill-defined settlement to the southeast, Haravan by name. It was a sprawl, its center and borders irregular, and its main body surrounded by a hillscape dotted with clusters of dwellings. Judging from its arrangement, it seemed to be either the dwindling community of a failed town, or one growing haphazardly where none had been expected to thrive. One of its spiraling arms stretched out and was closer to Elith's current position than the outskirts of Alaness by a good 12 miles or so. It wasn't clear what she would find there, but the area surrounding the location still seemed largely uncultivated. If nothing else, she could do some reconnaissance and then make a more informed decision before she committed, assuming she hadn't been captured by then. Haravan, then. She plotted a rough course, knowing she'd have to adapt it on the way, and then turned her attention to her other task. She hadn't collected all the data she'd wanted from her investigation site, but she hoped she'd gotten enough. The terminal had already synced with all of her collection instruments. Elith sat cross-legged and activated 3 separate displays, each a synthesis of specific, specialized readings. At first, she was once more confounded by the results, but as she worked meticulously through, eventually she recalled the data she'd collected from the preserve, the data she'd dismissed as all but useless, and it became clear that those results hadn't been wrong at all. According to the data, somewhere far below the surface and emerging from underneath the whirl, a second thread line ran toward the southwest, like a spider-thin crack, bending back in nearly the opposite direction of the natural flow of the first. It was just a trace compared to the parent, but it wasn't the line's size or direction that troubled her most. The analysis was definitive. This thread line was far newer than the age of the planet. Not something that had been established at the fundamental shaping of its matter, but rather a new outgrowth, like a thin tendril of green stretching out from an old knotted vine. Elith's initial thought was that the flow toward Alaness had been somehow redirected in some previously unheard-of natural inversion. But the more she investigated, the clearer it became that the young threadline wasn't born of Alaness's currents. The composition was too different. It was as if the old line had been severed and a new one grafted in from elsewhere, like a shoot of maple growing from the stump of an ancient oak. Though it was impossible to map the complete circuit from her current location, the directionality was unmistakable. The new thread line led back toward Orinnes, and presumably through the preserve of Eth Amuin. The earlier results from the preserve hadn't been wrong. They just should have been impossible. Elith was still pondering what this new revelation might signify when the stillness of night was cleaved by an acute blast. Chapter 11. Elith dodged low to the base of a tree 6 feet away. A second blast followed closely behind the first, and then a chorus joined, tumultuous, sharp reports that folded back on themselves in the echo of the hills. Gunfire, but not aimed in her direction. The storm of shots intensified, a rapid series of lightning strike cracks, and then ended as abruptly as it had begun. A broken silence fell again, the once peaceful wood now crackling with tension, as though the wilderness itself stood coiled to bound away. Elith remained crouched by the tree, straining her senses against the thundering of her heart. The wash of noise had made it difficult to judge the distance, but she guessed the shots had come from a mile or maybe two away at most, back toward the area where she'd spent the day investigating. It didn't take heightened awareness to know what had happened. The search team had closed in on her, and the golden fawn bear had found them first. Apparently, the trick with the berries had been far more effective than she'd expected. No telling how many guns, but from the pattern of fire, she knew there had been several single-shot weapons, rather than a few fully automatic ones. Not pistols or civilian model rifles. She couldn't be certain about the weapons, but there'd been a distinctly military quality to the report. 3 or 4 shooters, maybe, though she knew the full party was some larger. The members of Eth Amuin's detail were better equipped than she'd anticipated. Despite the darkness, Elith knew she had to move. The team was so close now, there was no question that they would catch up to her in the morning. And now that they'd just given themselves away, she had to assume they'd scramble to correct the error. She left her hiding place, broke camp, and was back to hiking through the darkness in under 5 minutes. Gone now was the painstaking care of covering her trail, replaced with the urgent need for distance. There was a chance the team would miss her tracks in the night. If not, her only protection was in maintaining separation. Still, hiking uneven terrain in deep night was a good way to break an ankle. Elith's pace walked the knife's edge between confident and reckless. Elith pressed on through the morning at her agonizing pace, the fear of capture just barely overcoming the aching of her body and the weight of her every step. As the light increased, so did her speed, until, when the sun had fully risen, she finally collapsed on the ground and gave herself time to breathe. She guessed she'd put some distance between herself and her pursuers, but she couldn't trust her ability to maintain that space. She had no doubt that they'd be able to pick up the haphazard trails she'd left hiking through the night. All her work would be for nothing if she were captured. And though all her focus had been on escape, she realized now she'd missed another avenue. Extraction. The Paragon had already mentioned a collection team. If she had indeed dispatched one, her sisters would already be in position now, ready to snatch her from her troubles and whisk her to safety. Perhaps the way forward was not hers to take. The Paragon had openly praised Elith's ability to operate in a variety of capacities, not just as an assassin of worlds, but as one who could see truly. And Elith couldn't help but feel she'd already made progress against incredible odds. Not a mission failure then, but rather the first move of a multi-stage operation. She had identified the twisting branch. Another hand would do the pruning. The thought brought her vision to mind and its odd self-naming of her. Elith Anuel, maker of ways. Apparently she'd already known then what the outcome would be. But even as her hand moved to retrieve her locator beacon, something rose within her, prevented the action. In that moment of faltering, it was as though the Paragon herself had reached across the galaxy and placed her hand under Elith to uplift her, support her, and guide her. Whether it was a result of her training, some deep instinct of an option left unexplored, or just her own pure innate determination, Elith found herself unable even now to turn away from her purpose. She would transmit her findings, incomplete as they were, and continue. And if capture were to be her fate, she would keep silent and endure. Resolve replaced doubt then, as her mind closed the door that the Paragon had inadvertently opened by mentioning the collection team. It took her only a few minutes to package up the data she'd collected and push it through the Tangle Interpreter's asynchronous passive channel. The transmission would take a few hours to reach the Paragon. In the meantime, Elith had to move. Speed became her goal then, and she headed southeast, no longer concerned with covering her tracks, but only with keeping her pace as fast as she could sustain. Elith's world gradually shrunk to the next step, and the next, and the next. By mid-afternoon, her thoughts were numbed by the hike, and she knew she was entering a risky state where mistakes were easy to make and tended to compound. A struggle started within her then, as she tried to decide whether to give herself some time to rest or force herself to press on, while knowing that her ability to make decisions was already compromised. She continued on for a half hour more, only because her body kept moving while she wrestled with indecision. She did stop eventually, though out of reflex rather than by choice. The tree line thinned ahead of her, and when she emerged, the sight stopped her dead in her tracks. A basin had opened before her, and farther on, her path was completely cut off by a wide river, gently flowing and glittering golden in the afternoon sun. Her nav device hadn't indicated any such body of water anywhere in the area. Either she'd wandered far from her course, or she was starting to hallucinate. Elith checked her nav tracker and then looked again at the river and realized the truth was closer to the latter. It wasn't a river, it was an immense golden glade. What she'd initially taken for water was actually tall grass rippling in the breeze. The realization was only a partial relief. Even though it was solid ground, she was hesitant to cross it. She judged it at a half mile across, and that was a long time to be out in the wide open. Looking along the length of the glade, however, there was no way around it close at hand. Judging from her nav device, she had drifted farther south than she'd intended. The basin narrowed about 200 yards farther up, and though heading that direction would take her farther off her intended path, it seemed worth it to her to avoid that much open ground. Elith turned and followed the tree line until she reached the narrower band. From there, it still seemed several hundred yards to the next point of cover, but the nearside forest started to bend away again, and continuing along it would have meant losing more ground than she was willing to give. She would have to cross as best she could, without leaving an obvious wake for her pursuers to follow. Each step required thoughtful placement to avoid crushing large clumps of the thin golden grass, and she adjusted her course several times to avoid creating a straight line cut across the glade. The effort drained her, and when she reached the trees that marked the beginning of an ascent on the other side, her body demanded she pause. She plopped down under a tree akin to a cedar, giving herself 20 minutes to rest. Elith sat with her back against the tree, looking back over the glade and evaluating her work. Though undoubtedly she'd left some tracks behind, the tall grass wasn't laid down in any obvious places. Her pursuers would have to be lucky indeed to come across any footprints. Satisfied, she pulled out her local nav tracker to orient herself and make sure she was still on the right heading. After a few minutes, she raised her head and scanned across the glade once more. Whether it was by luck or the result of some subconscious instinct, what she saw turned out to be both fortunate and frightening. A flicker of movement back across the glade, about 300 yards or so farther downstream from the point where she'd crossed. For a brief moment, Elith told herself it was her imagination and her fatigue conspiring against her. But even with her doubts, she found her hands reaching for her monocular. She brought the optic up and slowly swept the area where she'd thought she'd seen something. And just as she was about to lower it, thinking herself safe after all, she caught sight of a figure standing up from a crouch by the edge of the tall grass, and her heart practically stopped. She dialed the magnification up 2 more notches, and though she still couldn't make out the man's features, she could tell enough from his posture and body language. He was scanning the glade in both directions, looking for some sign of his quarry, for some sign of her. He hadn't picked up her exact trail, but he hadn't been too wide of the mark. A few moments later, she realized why. Somewhere high up above, she heard a faint, keening whine, one that barely made itself known amid the rustling of the breeze through the leaves. It was difficult to pinpoint, but here the danger that the glade had posed to her now became her advantage. She spotted a glint in the sky. Out there, a few hundred feet above the waving grass, a scout drone was making lazy, wandering movements. Not the rugged hunting variety that she'd seen Hawk using. This model was sleeker, quieter. There was no telling what track of hers it might have been capable of picking up, but one thing was clear. Whatever distance she'd gained over her pursuers was now all but gone. Across the expanse, a second man appeared by the first, followed shortly after by 2 more. They held a brief conference and then split up again, each pair following the woodline in opposite directions. Neither group was in the open long. They both slipped back into the trees and were soon lost among them. The drone continued its weaving path, and though it appeared to be continuing away from her crossing point, there was no guarantee it wouldn't double back. In that moment, Elith had to decide which was her greatest threat, the drone or her own weariness. In her dire need, she could attempt to use the deep language to override her body's depletion, but the effect would be short-lived, and the violent return of her temporarily muted fatigue would stack upon the cost of the cosmic call. The subsequent crash would extract a double toll. The drone, then. If she could rob her pursuers of it, it'd be easier to obscure her trail at the next hill and maybe open more space. Whether it was autonomous or being run from the ground, it must have been communicating with the search party somehow. Introducing a little noise into its signal would be less demanding. She pictured the communication stream in her mind, stretching out like a tether to the search party below. In the final seconds before the drone disappeared from sight, she spoke to it. Snow blankets the mountain. Silence in white. Elith felt the jolt of power pass through her, followed immediately by a wave of nausea as it compounded her fatigue. The last view she had of the machine, it was headed into the trees on the far side of the glade. She didn't wait to see what further effect she'd had. Seeing her pursuers so close and with her own eyes, refocused her mind and her resolve. Where her body had previously felt at odds with her purposes, it now seemed to better understand what was at stake. And though getting back to her feet took some effort after the use of the deep language, once she was on the move, she fell quickly back into rhythm. She made her way up over the rise and then moved laterally along the other side to break up her trail. The terrain required her full attention and effort, and even giving it her all felt like it was not enough. Like swimming upstream, racing against the coming night and haunted by the ghosts on her heels. The sun was already riding low when she first started hearing the distant buzz and hum of the occasional skimmer, and it had slipped halfway below the horizon when she reached the edge of her destination. The woods began to thin, and Elith slowed her pace as she neared the border, where they gave way to the first signs of civilization she'd seen in over a week. Not that there was much civilization to speak of. Elith wanted to crouch down at the tree line, but she feared that if she went to the ground, she'd be unable to regain her feet. She compromised by wrapping an arm around a tree and leaning all her weight against it while she scanned the area ahead. The woods gave way to a large, man-made clearing that looked like someone had dropped a gargantuan slab of concrete and crushed the forest beneath it. On one end, to Elith's left, sat a large, well-lit structure, or perhaps series of interconnected structures. The scalloped roofline arced and rippled irregularly, like wind-scattered waves. A large sign over the main entrance read, "Green Center." Dozens of people milled about or sat on benches around the exterior, and from what Elith could see, there appeared to be a good number inside as well. In front of the building, there was a short stretch of open ground and then a long, wide pad marked with landing zones where a number of private skimmers sat idle. The vessels were arrayed in a broken grid, as if on display at a second-hand dealer, 60-some, she estimated, with room for half again as many. They covered the spectrum of size and shape, from a few sleek two-seat runabouts up to a boxy high-capacity cargo runner that straddled four spots. One thing they had in common, though, was age and wear. Haravan wasn't a place of conspicuous wealth. Elith watched the flow of the place for a minute or two. A couple of groups of people were crossing from the pad to the main entrance, and they waved to each other, but didn't meet together. The atmosphere had an unusual blend of festival and routine. The people seemed pleased to be there, but lacked the wide-eyed wonder and excitement that typically marked a special occasion. The structure appeared to be a combined marketplace and community center, probably one of the few spots on the outskirts of an already out-of-the-way town where people could come together to visit and shop, perhaps the regular evening stopping point between work and home. Regardless of the center's function, one thing was clear. It wasn't the kind of place where she could just walk out of the wilderness and blend in. Elith knew the search party was right on her heels, and trying to hide in a small community from such a determined and skilled group wasn't an option. If she could get to a vehicle, though. She returned her attention to the skimmers on the pad. The best looking of the group was a black runabout, but it was on the front line, nearest the complex. Too exposed. Ultimately, she settled on a gray, practical six-passenger skimmer. It was older and bulkier than some of the other models, but it looked well-maintained. It was on the row, second from the back of the pad, and only about a quarter of the way from the tree line. She'd have some cover from the skimmers between her and the center, and only few spans of open ground to cross. She left the woods and walked calmly and confidently across the pad, initially looking neither around nor down. Head up, relaxed, going about her business, matching the rhythm of the people she'd observed. She knew the pack on her back might draw some attention, but she also knew that moving too fast or trying too hard not to be noticed would mark her more strongly. As she crossed the open space between the woodline and the skimmers, Elith glanced toward the main entrance of the building. A few people were coming out, headed toward the pad, but no one seemed to be paying any attention to her. A few steps away from the rear line of skimmers, though, movement in Elith's peripheral vision caught her attention. Two men, emerging from the woods. She recognized them as the first two she'd seen across the glade. They were farther down from where she had exited, perpendicular to her line of travel. Again, they hadn't caught her exact trail, but had come near enough to make an educated guess about her destination. They paused there, scanning the area, but their focus was on the green center. It took everything Elith had to keep her reaction calm and casual, so her motion wouldn't change and attract their attention. Just a few more steps. She reached the closest vessel and paused by its rear corner, crouching slightly to keep her head below its silhouette. The craft she was hiding behind was a wedge with rounded corners, shoulder height at its tallest point, narrower in the front than the back, snub-nosed, and not in good shape. The skimmer she'd intended to take was still 40 feet away, with only one other vessel between them. Crossing that stretch of space now seemed almost guaranteed to give her away. The craft was parked facing the building, and Elith peeked around from behind it. The two men were still there, one of them signaling toward the building complex. She followed the man's gaze and saw another pair of men standing at the perimeter closer to the structure. She didn't recognize those two. That made four of them, at least. The second pair moved toward the building. The first began crossing toward the lot of skimmers, one headed toward the front line of the pad while the other split off to start at the back. Elith dropped to a knee, mind racing. She couldn't make it to the ship she'd selected without them spotting her, nor could she return to the wilderness. She was trapped on the island of a beat-up skimmer. Exhaustion fogged her thoughts. Run or fight? Either way, she was going to have to lose her pack. She unbuckled the harness and let it slide to the ground. But before she could do more, she was interrupted by a voice behind her. "Excuse me," a woman said. "Can I help you?" The tone was neutral, but tinged with suspicion. Elith turned and saw the woman standing several feet away, a toddler in her arms. One of the people Elith had spotted coming out of the building, and she guessed the owner of the skimmer. There was no good way to explain. Elith stood slightly from her crouch, peeked over the top of the vessel. She'd lost sight of one of her pursuers. The other was weaving his way toward her at a measured pace. She didn't have much time. She glanced back at the woman and at the child in her arms, a little girl, maybe 4 years old. Their presence complicated matters. The fact that they'd stopped several feet from their skimmer was certain to draw attention. "Are you hurt?" the woman asked. But before Elith could respond, the woman looked over to her right, something attracting her gaze. Elith didn't have to look to know. Her hunters were coming. Fight, then. She reached for her baton. But before she deployed it, the woman stepped toward her. "Honey, are you in some kind of trouble?" Elith held a finger to her lips and retreated along the back side of the skimmer. A moment later, a man spoke from the front side, somewhere off to the left of the vessel and closing in.
"Everything okay, ma'am?"
The woman didn't answer, but Elith could hear the man's cautious footsteps edging around the opposite side of the craft. Elith continued to circle in a crouch, searching with her eyes for his partner while tracking the man with her hearing. He stopped somewhere a few feet from the front right corner, a polite distance from the woman, but close enough to get a view of where Elith had just been.
"I'm guessing that's not your pack, huh?"
the man said. Elith held still by the shoulder of the craft, scanning for that second man. The woman still hadn't answered any questions, at least not verbally. She might well be motioning to Elith's hiding place even now. Where was the second man?
"Mama,"
the little girl said,
"where'd the lady go?"
An electric gap of silence followed. Elith had to strike first. But just as her muscles tensed for the surge, the woman spoke.
"She ran off, sweetie,"
she said. Elith caught herself in time, rocked back into her crouch.
"She won't bother us,"
the woman continued, and then her voice changed, talking to the man now.
"Some woman was hanging out by my craft when we came out. Skittered off back toward the center when she saw us coming. You looking for her?"
"Yes, ma'am,"
the man said.
"She's dangerous."
"Yeah, looked like she was up to no good."
A pause and stillness.
"Cute kid," the man said a moment later. "Glad she's safe."
He waited another beat. Elith could almost feel the tension from the other side, could picture in her mind's eye how he was evaluating the woman, testing her.
"You have a good night, ma'am," he said.
And then he moved off, his pace quicker than when he'd approached. Elith slid quietly back alongside the craft toward the rear. The woman was already waiting there. "Yes," Elith said.
"I am in trouble."
"Your fault?"
"I don't know why they're chasing me," she answered honestly.
Elith had intended to pick up her pack, But the woman was standing in the way, scanning her with eyes hard and determined, and a moment later, her look resolved. She activated the rear hatch. It only opened halfway before the woman had to force it.
Come on, she said, waving Elith in, before they see you.
Elith hesitated, reading the woman's intentions.
Go on, she said, or I might change my mind.
Elith nodded and ducked into the craft. The interior had 6 seats total, 2 up front that swiveled and 4 in the back along the walls in pairs, facing center. A family vehicle. On one seat in the rear sat a stuffed toy, flop-eared like a rabbit. Its fur was matted, worn, and grubby from being so well-loved. The floor wasn't dirty exactly, but muddy shoes and crushed snacks had done a number on the thin carpeting. She moved up and crouched behind the forwardmost passenger seat. Behind her, the woman slung her pack in with one arm, still holding her daughter close. She paused there, looking once more at Elith.
Tell me I'm doing the right thing here.
You are, Elith said. The woman held her gaze for a moment, and then finally nodded. She set the girl on her feet in the craft and shepherded her to the seat with the toy.
Climb up in your seat, pumpkin.
The woman continued past Elith and dropped into the pilot seat. The little girl just stood there, staring at Elith.
Who's the lady, Mama?
She said.
Get in your seat, Hike,
the woman said more firmly. The girl clambered up and buckled herself in. The bubble windscreen gave a wide view out the front. Elith continued to keep watch as the rear hatch started to lower, stalled briefly, and then finished closing. She couldn't see the first man now, but spotted the second near the front line of skimmers, waiting for his partner to join him. The woman started the skimmer, the engines revved up, sounding a little ragged, and just as the craft started to lift off, it shuddered once and settled back to the ground. A warning light pinged yellow, and the engines went into a safety shutdown. In front of the ship, a faint trace of smoke wafted across the windscreen. And then, Elith caught sight of the first man again, 2 rows ahead, walking back toward the craft. She didn't panic, but felt the spike of blood pressure as her moment of escape began to slip away. The woman sighed loudly, and then leaned forward and jiggled something under the command console. The warning light went green. She reactivated the drives then, but waited before trying to lift off. She looked out the windscreen, craning her head to see the man who was walking toward them. He wasn't rushing, at least not yet. Elith remained crouched behind the front seat, partially out of fear of being seen, and partially because she wasn't sure what the woman wanted her to do.
Gotta give it a little time to warm up, the woman said.
The front right lift drive smoked lightly. Elith sank back against the frame of the ship, hiding completely from view. Next to her, the little girl Hike sat with her feet barely reaching past the end of the seat, singing quietly to herself, her beloved stuffed toy buckled safely in on her lap. Elith was already running the scenarios in her head. Out the rear hatch? How many seconds to force it open? And while she was preparing 100 plans of action all at once, the skimmer started to lift off, shuddered, dipped to touch the ground lightly, and then miraculously resumed its rise once more. 20 feet off the ground, Elith eased up from her low crouch, peeked out. The man was watching them take off, only a few skimmers away. She knew he couldn't see her, but somehow she got the feeling that he knew she was there, and she wondered what trouble she had just invited upon this woman and her child. The skimmer reached altitude and surged forward. Once it was in stable flight, the woman swiveled her chair around to face Elith. She was young, younger than Elith, but had the rough edge of a woman hard used by life. The look in her eyes reminded Elith of one she'd seen in her instructors. It was something like disappointment, touched by vague anger, but rooted in genuine concern. The judgment of an elder who expects a higher standard of conduct.
Thank you,
Elith said.
I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't helped me. Yeah, well, he had a gun under his coat and you don't. And I know he wasn't with local authority. My husband's a cop and that guy definitely wasn't one. How long have you been running from him?
The woman had already pieced together some bit of a story. Elith leaned into it, adopted the persona.
I don't remember. What day is it?
Tuesday, the woman said.
You got a safe place you can go?
Elith shrugged. Anywhere but here. She waited a few moments, then added, I need to get to Alaness, maybe.
What you need is a bath, sweetheart. Why don't you get up off the floor and take a seat?
The woman swiveled back around and worked the console for a few moments. Elith eased up and took a seat in the back, across from little Heike. The girl kept her eyes on her own feet, not shy so much as unconcerned by the strangeness of the situation.
You want to talk to my husband? The woman asked, over her shoulder. No,
Elith answered. No, thank you. I just want to leave.
Mama, I'm hungry,
Heike said abruptly.
I know, pumpkin. We'll go home in just a minute.
The woman continued to face forward, adjusting the skimmer's flight path. Elith looked out the window, back at the site they'd just left, watched as it shrunk to a tiny dot of light amid the swiftly darkening forest. After so many days of traveling on foot, it was shocking to see so much distance open up between her and her pursuers in so short a time.
When was the last time you ate? The woman asked.
Been a little while, I guess, Elith answered honestly.
But I'm okay. You can drop me off anywhere. I've already caused you too much trouble. Yeah, trouble has a habit of finding its way to my door.
The woman brought up a secondary display. Elith couldn't see over her shoulder enough to see what she was doing exactly.
There's a transit to Alaness leaving in about 40 minutes, she said a few minutes later. I can drop you at the pad. We should have time to make it.
You don't have to do that.
I already got you a pass.
She said it as a matter of fact, neither looking for gratitude nor tolerant of any argument. Really, I just, Elith said, and then trailed off. She genuinely didn't know what to say, either as her persona or as herself. The woman's gruff kindness was so unusual and surprising. Thank you. The woman didn't respond. After that, they traveled for several minutes in silence, apart from little Heike's singing. Elith watched the girl for a time. From her first moment on Quell, everything had been complicated and brutally demanding. Something about the simplicity of the moment, the innocently oblivious child, served as a powerful reminder to Elith of what she was fighting to protect. Little Heike had no idea how dangerous her world actually was, nor how much people she'd never met were willing to give to shield her from that knowledge. She would certainly never know how much her mother's act of kindness had played in their own salvation. Outside, the land and sky began changing beneath and around the skimmer. The clusters of homes and buildings became more frequent. Traffic picked up. As small as Haravan was by normal standards, to Elith's wilderness-calibrated senses, it seemed like a city thriving. Soon, the woman was merging her flight path with a skylane of several other skimmers, and ahead on the horizon, Haravan's transit station appeared. The woman set the skimmer to auto-navigate to the drop-off zone. It weaved its way through, coordinating with the skimmers around it to maintain flow. A minute later, they were drifting down and then coming to a stop, hovering by the walkway. The woman swiveled her seat around to face Elith. Elith leaned forward and grabbed her pack and started to dig through it, looking for something she could offer as a token of gratitude.
Nope, the woman said. I don't want anything of yours.
There's got to be something I can do to repay you, Elith said.
Sure, the woman answered. Make better choices. I don't know how many second chances you've gotten in your life, girl, but judging from the look of things, you probably shouldn't count on any more of them.
Elith wanted to do something, to commend the woman for her help, to bless her with the favor of the first house. But instead, she just nodded. Thank you again, she said.
Don't waste it, the woman said.
She still seemed vaguely angry, and anxious to be rid of Elith. Hers was a severe kindness. The rear hatch slid open halfway. Elith took up her pack and moved to the back.
"You have to push it the rest of the way," the woman said.
Elith nodded and forced the hatch open enough to squeeze through.
"Bye,"
Heike said, waving the little rabbit creature's floppy arm as Elith started to duck out.
"Goodbye,"
Elith said, smiling at the girl. She shared a brief look with the woman and saw a tenderness there, hidden behind her stony face.
"May you and your family ever ascend,"
Elith said.
"Yeah," the woman replied. "Wouldn't that be something?"
Elith nodded to her and exited. The rear hatch slumped back to halfway as soon as she released it, and then the mechanism engaged and sealed it behind her. As the hatch closed, the woman's look remained frozen in Elith's mind. It was the look of a woman who had seen this situation before, or what she thought the situation was, at least. Maybe she'd had an older daughter who'd run off, or maybe she herself had a hard past. The gray skimmer lifted off, shuddered once, and dipped slightly, then resumed its rise to join the traffic above. Elith didn't know what capabilities Eth Amuin's detail had to track vehicles, or if they would go so far as to confront the woman. If they did, though, she couldn't imagine what force they would encounter when they showed up at her door. Tired mothers clearly had no time for nonsense, or patience for foolish strangers. After the skimmer left, Elith merged with the flow of people entering the transit station, losing herself in the crowd. She took the woman's advice, and though the public shower was moldy and the water cold, Elith was reborn when she emerged, genuinely clean for the first time in what felt like a month. The woman's generosity had been as unnecessary as it was unexpected. Elith had access to untraceable accounts with more currency than she could have spent in her lifetime. She purchased a second pass to Alaness and hopped on the transit at the last call, leaving unused the one the woman had purchased for her, a dead end for anyone who might try to come behind. It was a short trip to Alaness. There, to cover her tracks, she purchased multiple passes to other destinations and sent the activated credentials along hidden in other passengers' belongings. As a final precaution, she waited a couple of hours before taking an early morning shuttle to her true destination. She reached Orinnes as the sun was rising the following morning, bruised and tired, and soon discovered she'd traded one kind of wilderness for another sort entirely.